Greetings, horror fans, and welcome to episode 235 of Frightmares. I'm your host, Austin Proctor, and joining me today is a new friend, fellow podcaster, new dad like I am, and beer enthusiast, John. I forgot to ask you how to pronounce your last name. I'm going to wing it. Is it John Vaught?
Vote.
Nice. Okay. Try. All right. So when I first saw it, I thought it was John Voight, and I was like, oh my God, John Voight? But no, John Vaught. Close. He is the host of the Little Hops of Horror podcast, and we recently met. You had shot into my DMs, well, I guess my email, and we did Midnight Meat Train on your podcast a few weeks ago, and I figured I'd have you on to do a, because you do modern horror over there within like the last 25 years, if I'm not mistaken. So I was like, because it was perfect because I was doing modern Christmas horror for this year, because typically we do like, you know, 80s, 90s, stuff like that. So I was like, let's keep it recent for December. Let's do some ones within the past 15 years. So I was like, I got to have you on for this one. Plus, you hadn't seen it. So I was like, that's even better because I've seen The Lodge, I think, 3 or 4 times now since it came out. But yeah, so how are we doing today, John? I know we had a little crisis earlier, but other than that, how are we doing?
We're up and running now. We got the rum and coke flowing, so I'm sure we'll be just fine as this goes on. Yeah, man, thanks for having me on, and I really appreciate the recommendation and everything. Haven't seen that before, so that was an experience. I actually recorded my own episode on this earlier, and in the middle of me going through this, and I'm looking over my notes, I'm like, this movie is fucking crazy. And it like stopped me in my tracks so many times, like in the middle of my own damn podcast, just trying to figure out what I even watched. So I'm definitely going to have to give it a revisit to see if there's like some loose ends I missed or I can appreciate things coming, you know, because there's a lot of callbacks in the film. But solid recommendation.
Yeah, it is. It's one that it's almost like Hereditary in the sense of like people that are going to like it are going to like it, or people that don't like the kind of slow burn, you know, or payoff at the end, you know, they might not like it. It's definitely not for everyone, but I do enjoy a good slow burn, especially done the way they did this one. It's got great cinematography. It's got phenomenal acting. It's got a wonderful score. All the pieces are there. And I wanted to do this one because I feel like not a lot of people just, they don't talk about this one a lot. And I just enjoyed it, even though it is definitely a lot. It's a whole viewing experience. That's why I try not to watch it too often, because it's like Hereditary. It's like I can watch that every so often, but like I can't fill my time with movies like this because then I'll just get into a weird headspace. So you got to switch it up. You know, I got to go probably when I go after the podcast, and I'll probably go watch something light and fun just because it is a very like heavy movie. So you have to be in the mood to watch something like this. But we will get into that in just a little bit. Since you're a first time guest here, I do like to, it's been a while since I've had like a new person on the show, so if you're new to this podcast, we'll have no idea what we're doing, but I like to get into your horror background, talk about what got you into horror movies and stuff like that. So let's just get going here, I guess you could say, and let's just talk about your intro to horror movies, if you can remember your first movie, like how old you were, and if you were scared or you wanted more.
Yeah, so my dad was a big Halloween guy. Like Halloween was literally a national holiday at my house. We would take the day off of work. I mean, obviously when I got older, but he would take the day off of work and spend the entire day setting up the yard, getting in costume. Like we were those people. We'd spend all day setting up the house just for like 2 hours of trick or treat, you know? And, yes, you know, so, but people would travel from all different neighborhoods just to come check us out. And we'd have new attractions every year. Like I have a coffin in my garage right now, that we built together. But he was real big into Halloween. And I think I, like a lot of kids, started, this was back in the video rental store days where, you know, they had all these awesome cover arts, from horror movies. And you as a kid are attracted to things you shouldn't be, right? As a kid, you think you're older than you are. You think you can handle these things where like, really you're fine with just Lion King, but you don't want to tell your friends that you low key just like to watch Lion King in your downtime. You're like, no, I definitely like Freddy Krueger. And so I think it was just one of those, I wanted to watch it cause it looked cool. And he was like, you know, promise not to get nightmares. You can watch it and you can watch more. Okay. And of course I got nightmares, but I never told him. But that was the first one that I can remember, honestly. And I was like right around 9 years old. Nightmare on Elm Street. So creepy, so scary. I was terrified to go to sleep. I would actually sleep with pillows next to me because I thought Freddy would come up from under my bed and pull me down. And as a 9 year old, you're like, a pillow will definitely save me, even though he comes through the mattress and pulls down Johnny Depp.
Oh, but, yeah. 100%. 100%.
But that was right around that time. I was like 9. And then like Scream started getting real big. That was what, 96 or 97.
Yeah.
So that area is where everything started happening and people were becoming, you know, kids were going as Ghostface, you know, trick or treat. So I think you either like it or you don't like it. It's not one of these things you can be half in and half out. I know you see a lot of that around the holidays. Well, Halloween, you know, it's spooky season. But I mean, if you're a horror fan, you're watching this stuff all year round.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And yeah, that's exactly how I am. I'm watching this all year round. And then I'll do like my 31 days of horror, or my 31 days of Halloween. And then even this year, for the first time, I usually do like 25 days of Christmas where I just watch Christmas movies. But now this year I'm doing 25 days of Christmas horror. And I'm doing like all, you know, cold, like this, The Lodge was on there, of course. It's a cold movie. And The Lodge is actually set around Christmas time. It's set on like December 22nd. So it's not necessarily a Christmas horror, but it does take place on a Christmas break. So close enough in my opinion. But yeah, I love watching horror movies all year. All right, so you said you were 9. First movie was Nightmare on Elm Street. And then Scream. I can remember. Do you remember, speaking of people dressing up as like Ghostface, do you remember the Ghostface mask that you had a little pump for that would like ooze blood? Yeah, just dated myself a little bit there.
I didn't even have that one. I just had the plain ass white one. And then like 2 years later, like all the cool kids got that one. And I still had the one. I remember the machete that had the fake blood that would go back and forth.
Yeah.
Like, that was awesome.
Hell yeah.
But for some reason, my parents would never let me play with that aside from Halloween. I'm like, I'm a fucking 10-year-old boy. Like, let me play with this. It's cool. I want to play Army or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Let me have this, man. Oh, that's right. Awesome. Okay, so what are some of your favorite horror movies, just kind of off the top here? What are we interested in, John?
It kind of depends on the mood, right? Like, it's not like you can just, I have this favorite horror movie. I'm a big fan of some classics. I mean, there's some ones that I think get kind of mistreated, so to speak, like Insidious. Mm. Like, that's an all-time great horror film. It's so creepy. It's so dark. It's so well done. It's only PG-13, which is crazy. Right. Mama is another one. Del Toro delivers so hard on that one. It is so good. Mama is such a creepy, creepy character. The ending's a little weird, but one, American Psycho, Evil Dead 2, you know, 2013. How could you not like that? Huge Terrifier fan. And to shake it up every once in a while, we're going to do Mandy. You know, that one's just fun to watch.
Oh, God, that one is absolutely wild. Nick Cage in horror movies. I'm like, I'm here for Nick Cage in horror movies. Let's see, Mandy, Willy's Wonderland. He's done a couple, and I'm always just like, yes, I'm here for that. Especially manic Nick Cage. He fits in so well. Okay. Is there any directors that stand out to you? Like, for me, it would be like Mike Flanagan. He's like one of my all-time favorites, and you know, John Carpenter for the oldies.
Right. And I mean, obviously we wouldn't be here without, you know, people like Wes Craven or John Carpenter, like you mentioned. But I mean, you got to appreciate that the new guys that have come out and made a name for themselves. You got, you know, Ari Aster, you got Eggers, Jordan Peele, Guillermo del Toro, I mentioned, James Wan, you know, and then the new kid on the block, who I think is going to do some great things, Damien Leone, man, he's really pushing the boundaries on what is acceptable in mainstream horror, and he doesn't pull punches. He has so much, like, he's got like the it factor right now, and he wants to take over like the Friday the 13th, you know, franchise, and I mean, I'm all for it. Like, let's see what he can do, bring that back to life. That would be awesome. But yeah, I mean, those guys, anytime that they're, you know, involved, you're going to get a good film.
Yeah, I heard he had showed interest in Friday the 13th, and I was like, please let him do that, because not only will it be amazing, it'll be super gory, and that's exactly what we need. We haven't had one since 2009, so we're on year 14. I think the legal battle is finally, you know, coming to a head here, and we might, you know, we're getting a TV show, like I mentioned before on the podcast. So that's at least something, but God, I hope they end it soon. And I really do hope they give it over to Leone, because he will fucking crush it. Specific genre. Is there something you find, like me, I like pretty much everything, but you know, I love found footage. I love paranormal. Is there a genre that you tend to gravitate towards more?
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't even thinking about the subgenres. I was going like, you know, paranormal, like demonic possession kind of stuff. And then, You know, just gore. If I just want to see someone get cut in half, or I just want, you know, you're, it's just like mindless fun.
Yeah.
You know, but as far as like the subgenre stuff, I mean, I just watched, I found footage one, The Possession of Michael King.
I was about to ask you about that. Yeah. That's a good one, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was a documentary style, found footage film about possession. Super cool, unique take. And that's what I like about those possession movies is like, you don't have to have top tier acting, right? Because it's supposed to be believable. They're supposed to be real people. You're not drawing tears in these dramatic moments. It's supposed to be like, I'm just a regular dude with a camera and weird shit's happening to me.
Yeah, so, pretty much. Yeah. Where is that one streaming?
I just rented it on Prime for a couple bucks.
Okay, yeah. That's one I haven't seen in quite some time, but really want to revisit because I remember watching it and liking it, but it's been so long, so I need to definitely revisit that one. Speaking of specific genres, is there a decade that you like? I know you do the past like 25 years, so I'm assuming that's kind of what you gravitate towards now because of the podcast. So like the last 25 years, so more modern horror than anything, just to kind of see new things, you know?
Okay, sorry, I lost you there for a second. It cut out on my end.
Sorry, so
god awful internet.
No worries. And this is gonna be we're doing this episode live. I'm not gonna do any edits because that's exactly how you do your show. So
hell yeah,
yeah. But so the last 25 years, you'd say, is usually what you watch more of for the podcast, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And more specifically, like I think my favorite is probably the 2010s because that was when I really started getting into film in general. I felt like any time before that I just kind of like, cool, Fast and Furious is on, I'll watch that. You know, but then I watched Drive, right? That was the first movie that I remember watching, like, this is so stupid. And then that scene happens where like dude or the chick gets her face blown off, and I was like, what is happening? This is not at all what I expected. And now it's like one of my favorite movies of all time now.
Yeah. That's a good one. That's one. Yep. I watched too. At first I was like, this is stupid. And then I rewatched it and I was like, this is brilliant. Why did I ever hate this? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So favorite horror icon. Do you have one? For me, it would be probably Jason Voorhees or like Jigsaw. I really do love John Kramer. I feel like he's a wicked horror icon. So is there one? I would assume maybe Freddy. Since that was kind of where it all began, or no?
Before I answer, what do you like so much about Jason Voorhees?
I don't know. I just like that he's a tank and he just rips through people, and I just love his movies. Out of like the like 80s, 90s genre, or not genre, but like the slashers, he's just, I don't know, I just love him. And like, I love all the iterations of him, and I love his story and how they do a pretty good job of keeping the mask, you know, consistent with like the last film. But yeah, he's just a hulking tank that just rips through everything. So I find that to be fun. But like, you know, for the more recent stuff, I like John Kramer just because he's like a character study, you know what I mean? Like, he's just so fascinating to me. So that's why I like Jason and John Kramer.
Yeah, he's great. For me, you nailed it. Freddy and Art the Clown are probably my two favorites. Just as I like the darkness. Like, Freddy is just so dark and twisted. He talks so much shit while he slaughters you.
Right.
And Art does so many, you know, crazy, he's a mime. You know, so he just does all the, he's very animated as he slaughters you. And there's just something really funny and playful about those characters, you know, just murdering people and just having fun with it. You know, where Voorhees is just like, he's just a tank and there's no emotion and there's nothing. You know, you stab him in the face and he's just like, cool. I'm going to stab you through a tree, you know, but like Freddy would like, oh God, you got me. Just kidding. And then, you know, I don't know. I just like how they talk shit. Even in Jason, Freddy versus Jason. Mm-hmm. How much shit Freddy talks the entire time to Jason. He's, you know, nothing. It's great, though.
It's funny, too, that you picked both of those because Freddy, like you said, is very animated. He talks a lot of shit. And, you know, for most horror icons, they're usually pretty silent. You know, Michael Myers, Art the Clown, Jason Voorhees, Victor Crowley, they don't speak. So I loved how you picked one that all he does is talk shit and then one that doesn't say a fucking word. You've got, like, two equal ends of the spectrum. So I like that. Oh, goodness. Yep. All right. So real quick here, let's talk about Little Hops of Horrors podcast. I know your background, but obviously the listeners do not. So unless they listen to you already, then hey, they're ahead of the game. But, you know, when did it start? What made you want to start it up? Just give us a little history on your podcast.
No, I don't mind if I do. And I won't take too long. I promise.
No, go. Just go. Just go for it.
I appreciate it. So I was a delivery driver for a couple of years and I found myself listening to a lot of podcasts and I never found like a good horror podcast. And then of course I found yours, but I didn't find that. I didn't find one that I really enjoyed. There was one, it was called like Horror Movie Reviews or something like that. And those guys were funny sometimes, but they tried so hard to be funny sometimes. And it's like, you know, I don't know, but I didn't think that I thought I could do it.
Okay.
And I had a genuine interest in horror movies. I mean, I've loved them forever. And this gives me a reason to explore more. Like we were talking the other day about like One Cut of the Dead. That's nothing. Yes. Yeah, I never would have watched that before, you know, but that movie was fantastic. Mm-hmm. So it just kind of came to be, and I was just kind of talking to some people about, well, let's see how much I can get a mic for. And I think I won one on like a bidding site for like $20. And I was like, okay, maybe let's just go for it. And, you know, I had a friend who was a graphic designer. She put the logo together. And ultimately, I don't think, you know, everybody reviews Halloween 78 or The Exorcist or Friday the 13th. Like those movies have been reviewed 10,000 times. How many times has Satan's Slave been reviewed? How great is Satan's Slave?
So
you know what
good.
I mean? Like there's so many modern horror just gets shit on so hard by people. Yeah. It's just that it's the, you know, horror fans are like boomers, man. Everything was better back then. But in actuality, like we have better production value now. We have better cameras, better special effects. I don't like CGI for the record, but
right.
It's just, you know, there's so many good horror films out in the past, you know, literally 25 years that I've really come to appreciate. And I feel like I'm not alone. So I figured I'd give a voice to them. And, you know, it seems to be doing okay. I think I have at least like 8 listeners now. So I'm very proud of that.
Yeah.
And you know, we're getting somewhere. This is fun. So
yeah,
it
definitely takes a little bit to get the podcast going, for sure. Like I remember when I've been doing this for a few years now, and, you know, when I first started out, you see the numbers and you're like, okay. But you know, we're swimming in a sea of horror podcasts, so you have to do something different. And I think that's what you bring to the table. You know, you're doing recent movies. You also talk about what beer you're drinking, which I love. And that's why it's Little Hops of Horror. You drink some beers, you talk about recent horror movies, and that's cool. And you're right. I love the fact that there's so many movies that you are seeing that you probably wouldn't have seen if it wasn't for the podcast. Like me, I mean, I know I typically do, we do everything, but we do focus a little bit more on 80s and 90s, but usually it's stuff like that I've never heard of, or it's stuff that is so under the radar that, you know, it's just not talked about. So we try to do weird, offbeat, quirky, fun movies. But then, you know, we do movies like this where it's, you know, the past few years and it's a nice modern horror. But I do agree with you. You know, we've got better special effects. Well, as long as it's not CG. I know the 80s were very, very well done with their practical effects. So we do have better cameras. We've got all this better stuff. And I appreciate someone shining a light on these new movies. I mean, shit, you've even covered a couple movies that I hadn't even heard of. And I'm like, okay, this is what I like. I like hearing. Yeah, I love hearing about movies that, because I try to stay as you know, ahead of the game as I can with horror movies. But obviously, I can't hear about everything. So I even your podcast, I'm like, ooh, I got to go watch that. And then I'll listen to your episode. And I love your episodes because they're like 30, 40 minutes. So they're like, they're quick. And I don't know how you manage to do a podcast by yourself. Fucking, that is so impressive. I know you have guests on every now and again, but man, doing a podcast by yourself, that is, and you don't edit anything. It's just live and it happens and it's great. I love it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, it's live. And that's what I like about podcasts so much, is because it's, you know, you watch the daily news or whatever, you know, sitcom on TV, and everything's so rehearsed with the laugh track and everything. And like, people gravitate towards bloopers because it's real life. Real
right.
life happens. And, exactly. And you know, that's what's fun about tripping over your words and then like calling yourself out on it, like, ah, idiot, you know, whatever it is. But it's just, yeah. And it's been fun, you know, being a beer nerd for all those years and bringing that into everything. It's just been, you know, we try to stand out and be a little different. Not saying we're great at it, but we're sure giving it the old college try.
Yeah, no, you've got a hook, and I really enjoy it. So I'm just, did you just happen to find my podcast on, like, where did you find it? I'm curious, because I have no idea how people actually find my material.
Honestly, dude, I have no idea. I think I was just like, I started my page. I wish I had a better answer for you.
No, you're fine.
I started like, you know, when you start getting all this stuff up and running, you know, you're getting, okay, well, I got to get a social media page now, and okay, I got to do this, and I got to do that. And I don't follow anybody really on Facebook. And I think yours came up as like a suggestion, and I was like, oh, click. And
nice.
Then you were just like always posting movies and stuff. And I was like, oh, he's posting some decent stuff. And then, you know, we started talking, and, you know, now here we are. Yeah, that was, that's all. I think it just popped up as like a suggestion, and okay. I mean, you're doing pretty okay for yourself. So that's pretty awesome. Let's take a second and appreciate that. I would golf clap because I'm sure it sounds terrible in the old mic.
But. I appreciate it. And now we're
cheers to you, buddy.
Thank you. Cheers to you. We're also part of the Horror Reviews by the Collective, which is a really fun. I'm glad to be part of that. I think that's amazing. Where everyone, you know, we got a great gaggle of people there who all review horror movies, and from you know all. Every decade, pretty much. Usually, I try to do more recent ones, but there, you know, I'll do one from the 80s or 90s. But it's a lot of fun. So go check us out. I think we just hit like 68K likes or some shit. Like, good God, that is a massive page y'all have. So it's a lot of fun. I've been doing more in-depth reviews because usually my reviews on Letterboxd are just like a couple sentences, maybe a paragraph. But I've really started like fleshing out my reviews, and it's a lot of fun. I try to do like, you know, one a week. But go check that out. Give us a follow. If there's nothing else, I don't think I have anything else for you. I've got some horror news, though. If you'd like to lend me your ear, I could share. There wasn't a lot of stuff today, which is weird. Usually I have, like, a whole bunch of stuff. But I do have some pretty good stuff. I don't know if you know who David Dasmalchian is, but he has been in a lot of horror movies lately, and he has actually joined the cast of another horror movie called Dust Bunny, which I have no idea what that movie is, but I really hope it's about a killer dust bunny. That would be just amazing.
Like the Blob.
Yeah, like the Blob, but just Dust Bunny. So it is a feature directorial debut of Hannibal creator Brian Fuller. This information comes over from Collider. Says Collider... Collider has exclusively learned that Dasmalchian has joined Mads Mikkelsen and Sigourney Weaver in the Entertainment One and Thunder Road production about an 8-year-old who enlists the help of her intriguing neighbor to kill the monster under her bed that she believes ate her family. Which, I really hope it's just a fucking dust bunny. That would be amazing. Collider reports further, describing Dust Bunny as a, quote, throwback to the family horror films of the 80s, which seems to tell us what sort of tone Fuller and company will be aiming for here. It does not, however, tell us who Dasmalchian or indeed Mikkelsen and Weaver will be playing in the film, but who knows? Maybe one of them is mocapping the monster under the bed. I'm here. Yeah, I'm here for it. I do love a good, and that's a stacked cast. Are you kidding me? What was the last horror movie Sigourney Weaver was in? Cabin in the Woods from like 2011? Because I'm pretty sure that was it.
I don't know, honestly. And then I saw the dude from Hannibal's involved in that too, right? Is that what I just saw?
Yeah. So I believe
he's directing it.
The creator of Hannibal, Brian Fuller, is directing this. And Dasmalchian's been in The Boogeyman, which was the Stephen King adaptation, and The Void to the Last Demeter. So he's kind of like breaking into horror, and I'm okay with that because I love David Dasmalchian. He's a fantastic actor. He was also in Suicide Squad as the Polka Dot Man, I believe that's what it was. So this sounds interesting. It's definitely going to be a movie for 2024. I'm very excited to whatever this movie is. I love a good movie that gets announced, but there's not like a whole bunch of information about it. But with that cast alone, I will absolutely be going to see that if it comes to theaters. If not, then I will stream it. I don't care. In other horror news here, IT writer Gary Dauberman, if that's how you say his name, is going to help turn Screen Gems into a house of horror. If you don't know who Screen Gems are, they are a production company. They do a lot of things. One of the biggest filmmakers responsible for some horror hits of the last decade is now going to be responsible for turning Sony's Screen Gems into a player in the genre space. Gary Dauberman, the writer of the blockbuster It films and the director of Annabelle Comes Home, has signed on for a first look deal with the studio, per The Hollywood Reporter. But the deal is part of a later push by the studio, and Dauberman now figures to be a big part of what's to come next. This is very exciting because I love all the movies that this man has worked on. The report notes that Sony is trying to get Screen Gems to become more productive overall. The label focuses on lower budget horror films, and as it happens, horror tends to fit that bill, as usually horror movies are pretty cheap to make for the most part. Plus, horror has been the most reliable thing at the box office over the last couple of years, which is amazing to hear. I love that. Horror has been killing it recently, to be honest.
Well, when you spend 10 grand on a movie, it's hard to fucking lose money, you know what I mean? Right.
As such, this deal with Dauberman is expected to help jumpstart the initiative, as Sony, via Screen Gems, will have the first bite at the apple for any future feature project films in the mind of Dauberman. So whatever he comes up with, Screen Gems is going to be like, fuck yeah, let's make it. So that's exciting. Dauberman definitely has a good decorated past, and I think he's going to bring some good stuff to Screen Gems. I'm trying to think of what Screen Gems has even put out recently, but I know it's Sony. Sony is a big, big corporation, so I'm sure they're going to be turning out a whole bunch of stuff. He's also, you know, he's been in the Conjuring universe. He's written the Annabelle trilogy. He wrote The Nun. So, I mean, we could have a new franchise on our hands here at some point if they let this man just get up and run with it. He also wrote It and It Chapter 2. So, I mean, the man has plenty going on. I'd say he's got the talent, and I'm sure that's probably why he's been hired to do this first look deal. If you don't know what a first look deal is, it's essentially whatever Screen Gems wants to do, they will give him the first look at it, and if he wants to tackle it, then he will get to do it. That's a pretty... I would love to be doing that. That would be amazing. Hey, Dauberman, you want to look at everything we want to do and say yes or no on it? That's pretty amazing. Not going to lie here.
I just looked up real quick.
Oh, yeah, go for it.
Two Screen Gem films that came out this year. Insidious, The Red Door, and The Pope's Exorcist, which was a lot more fun than I thought it was going to be.
You know, I really thought it was just going to be like, oh, here we go, another Exorcist movie. Mm-hmm. But honestly, what's his name? Russell Crowe? He was fantastic in that movie.
So good.
His accent was amazing, and his performance was just, I was honestly floored by it. And it was kind of just another Exorcist movie, but man, that shit was creepy. Woo!
Yeah. I just need more of a shit-talking priest that rides a moped and convinces a demon to get into a goat, and then he shoots the goat in the head. Like, I need more of that in horror movies. If they can just, like, don't take it seriously and just make him just going around talking shit to demons, I'll watch it all day.
Dude, yeah, that was, like, one of my favorite parts is because he essentially lured the demon out into, like, you know, not a person, and everyone around him was like, you can't do shit like this. He's like, watch me, bitch. I will do this all fucking day. And yeah, his attitude and just his swagger in that movie was so good. God, he was amazing in that. we've got a new twisted splatter comedy called Destroy All Neighbors, which is hitting Shudder next month. So good news to all you Shudder subscribers. Today brings good news for fans of splattery horror comedies, which I know we both are. Josh Forbes's Destroy All Neighbors, starring the great Alex Winter from Freaked, The Lost Boys, and Jonah Ray Rodriguez from Mystery Science Theater 3000, is headed to Shudder next month. And to mark the occasion, they've dropped an awesome new poster, which is on Fangoria, which is where I get all my information from. So you can go check out that poster on Fangoria's website. The official plot synopsis is William Brown, played by Jonah Ray Rodriguez, a neurotic and self-absorbed musician determined to finish his prog rock magnum opus, faces a creative roadblock in the form of a noisy, grotesque neighbor named Vlad, played by Alex Winter. Finally working up the nerve to demand that Vlad keep it down, William inadvertently decapitates him. But while attempting to cover up one murder, William's accidental reign of terror causes victims to pile up and become undead corpses who torment and create more bloody detours on his road to prog rock Valhalla. That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
It sounds
quick
wacky.
Side note.
Yeah.
Quick question.
Yeah.
What's your favorite horror comedy of all time?
Ooh, man, on the spot. Let me think. Favorite horror comedy of all time. I mean, I hate to be basic, but I love Shaun of the Dead. I think that is hilarious. Yeah, it's probably got to be, if not my favorite, definitely top three that I can think of right now. That and also Tucker and Dale versus Evil is also pretty solid as well. About
those
you?
Those two are fantastic. Yeah, you took them. They're just like the two best. I will say the funniest one that I've seen recently was Deadstream. Have you watched that yet?
Yes, Deadstream was so hilarious. Good. I need more movies from. So him and his wife actually did a short for VHS 99, and they also did that movie. I need so much more from them because they are hilarious. Not only is it good practical gory effects, but they're so funny, funny. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, that was great.
So it looks like this movie is going to be dropping on January 12th. So that'll be something to start off the new year with, which is amazing. I love a good January movie because usually studios just like to dump their movies they don't think are going to work well in January. But this is going to Shudder, so I'm not worried about it doing well. This sounds amazing. So that's all I have for horror news. Let's go on to the IMDb roundup here. We are talking about The Lodge from 2019, but it was released on February 7th of 2020 in the U.S. It is rated R for disturbing violence, some bloody images, language, and brief nudity. There is mild sex and nudity, moderate violence and gore, mild profanity, mild alcohol, drugs, and smoking, and moderate frightening and intense scenes. This is an hour and 48 minutes, and honestly, that's probably my only complaint, is it is a little long, but I feel like they fill the space well. Like, it didn't seem like it dragged at all. I don't know how you feel about that.
Just a tiny bit towards the end. I mean, they could have... I actually talked about that on the podcast, that, you know, they didn't have to see through like the prayer, like at the end, and her like spiral into madness. Like, some of that was kind of drug out, like the whole thing of her walking in the lake and finding that random cabin. Like, that didn't really add anything to the story.
That's fair.
You know, like, some of it was drug out, but most of the time, I mean, you're pretty invested, mainly because you're trying to figure out what the hell is going on. You know, and you're thinking, oh, this cabin in the lake is definitely what's, you know, causing all this. Nope, it's nothing. Okay, on to the next thing. Maybe this is what's causing everything. You know, so, I mean, it strings you along a little bit, but I mean, for good reason.
Yeah, I agree. There's definitely some parts they probably could have cut out. But yeah, so it drags a little bit. This is listed as a drama, horror, mystery thriller directed by Severin Fiala, who also directed Goodnight Mommy, the original, not the remake, which was not that great. Also directed by Veronica Franz, who also directed Goodnight Mommy. Written by Sergio Cassi, who wrote this movie called The Call for Netflix, which is a fantastic Netflix original, which doesn't happen very, very often. And it was also written by the directors as well, Veronica Franz and Severin Fiala, who they also wrote Goodnight Mommy. Composed by Danny Bensi, who has 142 credits. So this man has worked. He composed things like Enemy from 2013, The Gift, The Autopsy of Jane Doe, The Rental, and every episode of Ozark. So the man works, done a lot of stuff. Also, Jesus. Yeah, he had a lot on his resume. And it makes sense because this...
Imagine him applying for a job. He just right. Here's this book.
Here's my just book of
145 examples I've done.
And they're all hired. Yeah, you're hired. I mean, there's no reason to not hire you. So it's also composed by Sander Juryens, and who his same amount of credits and also done the same thing. So I'm assuming they're a duo that have just done all this crazy amount of shit. Cinematography by, I'm so sorry, I'm going to butcher this, Timios Bakatakis, who also did the cinematography for The Lobster and The Killing of a Sacred Deer. If you haven't seen those movies, woof. Yeah. Oh, my God. They are so weird, and they are so traumatic. Oh, my God.
Dark
shit.
Yeah, Killing of a Sacred Deer was such an intense movie. Yeah. You're not sure where it's going. That dude plays such a, like, I don't even know his name.
Colin Farrell?
But, yeah. No, I know that guy.
Okay.
The kid.
Oh, yeah. The kid with the eating spaghetti kid. That kid. Oh, God. Yeah.
The one who was like responsible for everything that they killed. Yeah. Well, we're not going to spoil. But yeah, like that kid. He was in Banshees of Inisherin recently also.
Yep.
And he played the one like slow kid.
Yeah.
I guess. And he did great in that also. Like, he's like one of those really underrated actors that. What anything he's in, he's really good at.
Yeah, he's very like unsettling in The Killing of a Sacred Deer. He makes me so uncomfortable, which is his job. Yeah. But man, he fucking nailed that. He was also had a small part in that A24, The Green Knight. He was in that for a little bit, which was
I haven't seen that.
Very heady movie. Oh my God. So edited by Michael.
It has the kid from Hereditary in it, right? Like the main character.
No. It's the guy. Oh man, it's the guy from Stand By. Let me look. This is gonna drive me crazy if I don't know. The Green Knight, not the Free Knight. No, the Green Knight. Knight.
Also, quick side note. When you were reading off all the things that this movie had,
yes.
Like the, you know, brief nudity, disturbing graphic violence, or whatever the hell that was.
Yeah.
Why did they even bother putting mild violence? Also, like, you covered the big one.
I know.
Like, is that the breaking point for parents? Like, oh no. Nope. It has mild violence. Can't see this, but there's brief nudity. That's okay. Like, I don't understand why you even put that in there. Back when we used to watch horror movies, it was like violence, language. Sex, and they were like, now they have all these subcategories of ratings and everything. Yep. They did not have that before.
Nope. It used to be much simpler, and now there's all these breakdowns of everything. Yeah, it's very odd. So the guy,
mild terror,
mild spookiness. Be careful. The main guy from Green Knight is Dev Patel, and he was I think the biggest thing he did was Slumdog Millionaire from 2008.
Why did I get him confused with the guy from Hereditary?
He kind of does look like Alex Wolff a little bit. I think it's the hair and it's the facial hair and the hair on his head. So yeah,
hair,
just hair. where was I? Cinematography edited by Michael Palm, who also edited Goodnight Mommy, starring Riley Keough as Grace, who is also in It Comes at Night as Kim, and she is phenomenal in this. Oh my god. Then we have Jaden Martell as Aiden Hall, who is Bill Denbrough from It Chapter 1 and It Chapter 2. Then we've got Leah McHugh as Mia Hall, who was also in The Eternals as Sprite. Richard Armitage as Richard Hall, who was, I didn't even realize this until I was writing this up, but he's in the Hobbit movies as fucking Thorin Oakenshield. Had no fucking clue. I mean, he does look.
That's him?
Yeah. Yeah.
I fucking hated him in that movie.
Wait, in this movie?
No. Well, both. Yeah, he was my least favorite character.
yeah, he does look a little different in The Hobbits, but yeah, I had no idea that was him. And last but not least,
that's the main guy, right? That the one that like wants the stone in the mountain, and then he gets all hates Bilbo. There we go. I'm getting my
He's Hobbit the main guy, up. The main greedy whatever.
Yeah, he sucks.
He sucks in this and he sucks in that. Fuck you.
Yeah,
Richard
I don't
Armitage.
Like him. I don't like him.
We get a small cameo from Alicia Silverstone as Laura Hall, who you might know from Clueless as Cher.
That's a nice way to put it.
Yes, very brief. It was very short-lived. estimated budget of NA, couldn't find anything. Gross $3.2 million, filmed in Quebec, Canada. You can watch this on Max as they have dropped HBO. Fuck HBO, it's just Max. Movies that came out around the same time, we've got Bad Boys for Life, Gretel and Hansel, Sisu, Birds of Prey, Fantasy Island, VFW, Monster Hunter, Brahms the Boy 2, and Onward. This was a very weird time for movies as it was 2020, so this is like right before COVID hit, so that's why you have all these good movies that they push out of the theaters. So but
dude, Sisu was so good. Did you see that?
I actually just bought the 4K a few weeks ago and watched it for the first time. It's like John Wick but with an old badass dude. It's amazing.
Yeah, so good. Just an old World War II Viking guy. That's it.
It's so
awesome.
Good.
It's so
good. Oh, my God. It's so good.
I think you can kill anybody in a movie you want, and nobody will feel bad as long as they're Nazis. Because anytime there's Nazis involved, people are like, yeah, fuck those guys.
Yeah,
just kill
fuck them up. And he did. My God. Oh, my God. Okay, let's do our specific horror moment. Was there any moment in this movie you were like, God damn?
Yeah, so I had a childhood crush and mostly an adulthood crush on Alicia Silverstone. It might still exist. But I was very excited to see her in this movie. And turns out it's just a cameo because she blows her fucking head off. Like 5 minutes in, I was not expecting that. The other scene that was, it was kind of dark and it kind of, you know, I just, took me a second to like really realize what was happening towards the end when she's, I guess repenting. I don't know if that's a verb or not. But she's on a burning log.
Oh yeah.
And she's like punishing herself. You know, that those two scenes in particular really stuck out to me.
Okay, yeah. My horror moment. I mean, really, yeah, I have two as well, just because that first scene with Laura, you do not expect. You know, suicide warning for anybody going into this, because yeah, it happens very quickly in the beginning, and they don't shy away from it at all. You see everything. So that was very shocking. But my other one was, it was a dream sequence, but it's when Grace woke up on the frozen lake, because she had fallen asleep prior to that scene, and she wakes up. I'm like, oh my fucking God, you almost fell into that earlier in the movie. And then she does fall in, and she gets pulled under by the cult leader. And I was like, what the fuck is happening? So
yeah, a lot of mind fuckery going on here where you're like, that was like the start of it, if I remember correctly. Like, what is happening? So the dreams are happening, but like, now is this reality,
right?
Or is this a dream? You know, it's like, that was awesome.
I can't really say I have a favorite kill because there's only one and it's horrific, but I mean, that's definitely the most traumatic kill, is when Laura kills herself. There's no other kills in this movie besides that. Well,
there is one.
What's the other one? Oh shit, there is. Oh my god, yes. Okay, my favorite kill is the one where she, yes, where fucking what's her face, Grace, shoots her soon to be husband because she thinks everyone's dead and nothing is real. And I was like, you idiot. What
amazing.
Did you do?
That was amazing. Right in front of the kids.
They're right, like, in front of the kids. God. Like, holy shit.
She's like, it's fine, kids. We're already dead.
Yeah, we're already dead. It's fine. Look, and she put the gun to her head and she and nothing happens. So she's like, see, everything's fine. You're like, everything's not fine, Grace. You have completely gone off the deep end. Favorite character for me were the kids, just because, my god, those poor kids. They had a great bond, though. They had a great, like, bond between them. They were definitely there for each other. They were a great brother and sister team. But yeah, I have to go with them because everyone else was kind of a shitbag in this movie.
Wait a minute. Fuck them kids. They're the ones that played the trick on Grace. Or oh, sorry, sorry. The entire movie.
Sorry, no.
Did we watch the same movie?
I
what is happening?
I confused them for my least favorite character. I'm so sorry. My favorite character was Alicia Silverstone. I'm so sorry. Let me redact everything I just said. What am I doing?
Did you watch a Parent Trap? What is happening here? Like, this is what it sounds
no,
like.
No, not the kids. I like the bond that the kids had, but they're fucking shitbags as well. Yeah, Laura was the only one that was like a good, wholesome, decent person. Everyone else in this movie sucked so bad.
I liked Grace. She really? Was my favorite. Yes, because what did she do wrong?
Besides being in a cult, nothing.
That wasn't her fault. That was her dad.
That's true. Okay. That's fair.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Okay, so then she goes through all that, survives, has PTSD, gets scooped up by this guy who, well, we have to talk about why or how this happened at some point, if you want to do it now or if you want to do it
let's
after.
Let's just do it now. Yeah, let's do it now since we're on topic. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, so what was the point here? Why did he like scoop her up? And obviously this was planned. The kids were in on it somehow. And I know that they said he was a writer, right? They talk about that earlier in the movie. Mm-hmm. So is this a book for him? Is this something he's trying to write? What's the end game? But they go too far. And I actually wonder, so she ends the reign of terror. There's no more, right? Yeah. She kills the kids. So you think, and she definitely kills the dad.
Definitely.
Yeah. But you wonder how much, you know, and they don't really show it. Because they're very misleading the entire movie. But did the mom take that out because she was tired of getting fucked with also? Did you see was something happening before? You know, like did we come into the middle of the story is what I'm in. So Grace just ending it. That's why she's my favorite.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense, though, because, yeah, because I know they say, too, at one point the kids say she's from your book. So I'm pretty sure he's doing a book, like, on her, if I'm not mistaken. I think I heard that in the beginning, but I can't confirm because there's a lot that's left up in the air with this movie. Not everything's explained, so I don't know.
Yeah, a lot of loose ends, for sure, and that was one of the beefs I had with it was just they throw a lot there, and then, you know, there's a lot going on, but not everything kind of – you know, gets, you know, explained.
Right. Okay.
But yeah, I mean, it was definitely, yeah, he talks about, this is the girl in your book. I think his son talks about it, Aiden.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's a psychopath and whatever, like, how can you be with her? And then they find that video of her walking around filming all the dead bodies and all that stuff.
Yep.
So dad's definitely got, but what was up with the lodge? What was going on with that? That little dollhouse thing that they had.
Yeah, it was like foreshadowing all the events that were to happen in the movie. I don't know, because they set up before they left, they set up that little miniature of like the scene that they kind of tried to convince Grace of, that they had all died from the gas. And, you know, it said repent on the walls and all that stuff. You have to repent for your sins. So I guess they were trying to gaslight her into repenting for what she had done. But wait, for what reason? Why? Why were they trying to do this to her? Just to make her that's the one thing I do not get with this movie is like, why were they trying to gaslight her into repenting for what she did? She got away from it. And that was
she didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah, she was just caught up in the middle of because she was 12 when all this happened, and the cult
fuck
leader
you for surviving.
Yeah, screw yeah, so you survived. How dare you? And her dad was the cult leader, so it's like she didn't do anything. You know, so it's yeah, it's a case of like weaponizing Christianity against kids, and she was just kind of there in the middle of it. So yeah, okay, all right. All right, I can. I was kind of not on board with that answer, but now you've kind of opened my eyes. Like, I can kind of understand where you're coming with that, because yeah, she really didn't do anything, and she was doing better because she was taking her pills that the kids fucking hid, yep. And she was doing a great job. And then yeah, they're basically like, fuck you for getting out. All right, so your least favorite character is the kids.
The dad. Yeah, he was kind of the guy behind it all. And again, you just don't know, like. Was this just another, like, did he do this to the mom too? Is that part of the reason why she just, ooh, like, bang, that's what I mean. That's what I mentioned earlier. Like, did she fuck with her, you know, before, like, is Grace just the next victim in a line? Are the kids just as fucked up and groomed or whatever in some kind of cult? Like, this movie has so many layers and possibilities of what could have happened. And they explain two things.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's true. And I do like a mysterious movie. And I mean, I don't literally need everything answered because I do like a little bit of mystery. But at the same time, I feel like they should have explained maybe a little bit more. Yeah, my least favorite characters were, if not the dad, then yeah, it was Aiden and Mia just because of what they did to her. It's a fucked up joke because, you know, they're watching The Thing, which, nice poll, by the way. I really like that because that's also a, you know, movie that takes place in the cold and they're all isolated. So I was like, okay, cool. And then they switch over to Jack Frost. I was like, those are two completely tonally different movies. But they're watching The Thing and they bring in the gas burner. And, you know, she's like, is it supposed to smell like that? He's like, yeah, it's fine. And then, of course, she wakes up the next day. Everything is, like, missing from the house. All the stuff is gone. The decorations are gone. All the food is gone. Everything. The power's out. There's no running water. And you're like, okay. So, and it's, like, right at that point, I was like, oh, my God, they're dead for sure. This is purgatory. This is what's happening. And that's what you think for the longest time until she finds her dead dog, Grady. And, of course, I'm like, do you have to kill the dog? Why is it always the dogs have to die? And then the kids are like, it was a joke. We're sorry. And they'd been hiding everything, like, in the basement the entire time. That is the sickest fucking joke. I had completely forgotten about that twist.
Yeah, too little, too late.
It was like, oh, my God. What are you kids doing? So they were playing.
It was brutal, man, honestly. The dog thing, come on. Can we stop killing dogs in horror movies? Any movie? It's just awful. Even if it's like... like Marley and Me. Don't kill the dog. Just always make it live. Like, you have to deal with that in real life. I don't want to deal with it in a movie, too.
Yeah, seriously. And this one, too, it froze to death. Like, damn, dude, that's brutal.
And then they show it later in the movie.
They show it a few times. Yeah, she's holding the dog, and then the dad sees it when he walks in. You're like, oh, God, I don't want to.
He's like, oh, fuck. That was, like, his moment where something was going wrong.
Yeah. So I usually have some sort of a favorite line, but there's no, this is not a funny movie. This is a very serious movie. There was no funny quippy one-liners. I don't have one. I don't know if you had one, but I'm assuming probably not. Maybe just repent.
I couldn't remember because of like all the crazy shit that happened. I was like, there isn't really a line that
nope.
The only thing that I just remember, shock value and crazy shit that happens, and like Alicia Silverstone killing herself 5 seconds into the movie.
5 seconds in,
like what? What?
Yeah,
that's the big. Yeah, I was dialed in after that though. Great recommendation.
Yeah, I'm gonna get into that in just 2 seconds here. IMDb summary: a soon-to-be stepmom is snowed in with her fiance's 2 children at a remote holiday village. Just as relations begin to thaw between the trio, some strange and frightening events take place. Yes, some strange things do take place because you're thrown into this movie with just so much information so quickly, but it's not like it's overwhelming because you're jumped into Alicia Silverstone's character, Laura, and she is mentally breaking down. You can see it from the very beginning, and she's taking the kids over to meet, you know, their dad and, you know, the new fling, even though it's funny. I don't know if you noticed this. You can see a shot of her upstairs, but the dad says she's not here. I'm like, I just fucking saw her upstairs. So now you're lying to your kids. Mm-hmm. It's a very quick shot, and they have a conversation, you know, Richard and Laura, about, hey, I think we should finalize the divorce. I'm going to get married to Grace. I'm like, good Lord, you are already getting married to someone else, and you haven't finalized your divorce? Scumbag. Just a piece of shit. Already off the bat, I was like, I don't like Richard. And if that wasn't enough, 6 months later, we cut to Thanksgiving after Alicia Silverstone has just blown her brains out. He's like, hey, we should go up to the mountains for Christmas. We should bring Grace with us because they haven't even met Grace at this point. It's been 6 months plus however long they've been seeing each other before that. Haven't even met her yet. And he's like, let's just throw everybody in a cabin together and we'll all have fun. No, That sounds awful. And the kids are like, hell no, we don't want that at all. And then he drops on them that he's going to marry her. And they're like, fucking what the hell, Dad? On Thanksgiving. Also, who the hell has lasagna for Thanksgiving? Did you notice that? They had lasagna.
That guy. No, I didn't notice that, but that guy apparently.
Yeah, that guy has fucking lasagna for Thanksgiving. So yeah, you know, that he eventually everyone reluctantly agrees to do this, and I'm like, this is going to be horrible. So he sticks everybody in a fucking cabin, and the kids obviously don't like her at all. And you can tell right away that, you know, Grace has problems with religious artifacts, and that's because of her past. She was in a cult as a kid, like we've mentioned, and the entire cult committed suicide except for her. Did the cult leader as well? Did he do it? Did he commit suicide as well? Because they don't mention him.
Yeah, I think he did. I think that was part of it, and she was to film it, because you catch a quick glimpse of when they're looking on the computer.
Yeah.
Of a girl, and it's not explain, but you kind of just put two and two together that it's her.
It's got to be her, yeah, from a young
and
age.
So but what they do a good job in this movie is, you know, she has this thing against religious artifacts, and you're not quite sure if it's because if she had anything to do with it,
right?
You know, if she is a bad guy, because she's kind of portrayed as the bad guy through the kids' eyes. They change the villain a lot in this movie, and but they do a really good job at it, because you don't know what's going on. You really just have no idea.
Right.
Quick point: did you notice the doll that Mia's playing with? It's mom.
Yeah, it's a replica. It's like a replica of her mom, and that's why she held it so near and dear. And that doll goes through some shit. Oh my god.
Yeah, but it makes you think that like there's some kind of paranormal entity come, you know, that's like with the ice part. And then you know there's like the door opening and shutting in the middle of the night, and then they go over to the window to notice it's open, and there's like 4,000 snow angels.
I don't think the kids did a callback.
Right, but it's like a callback to that movie she shows earlier, you know. So it's there's a lot of they do a really good job of keeping you guessing this movie, and not in a cheesy way.
Right.
Like they do that very well. That's why I really want to rewatch this.
Okay. Yeah, I also noticed too, there was a couple scenes at night where the dog was seemingly barking at nothing. I mean, I was assuming, I assumed it was Grace because she slept walk, but why would her own dog be barking at her? So it's like there is kind of a paranormal element there, and it almost feels like that. I think it's Mary Magdalene, the painting that, I believe it's Mary Magdalene, because she calls out to it as mother. But I think that's kind of like a representation of Laura as well. It's like she's constantly reminded of Laura with the whole movie that Mia shows her. And I feel like that painting on the wall, it just for some reason it vibes like Laura. I don't know. But the cojones this dad has with not only doing all this stuff beforehand, but also having sex with her the first night at the cabin, and like, you know, with the kids in earshot. I'm like, you're such a piece of shit. It's like, you're
just
such a piece of shit.
Banging your new girlfriend. Like, yeah. Keeping your kids up all night.
That
they hate. What a dickhead. Also about that painting question I have for you.
Yes.
Do you remember, their obsession with that dollhouse thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
The lodge.
Yeah.
And before it's like right after the funeral, there's a quick scene where they're all like kneeling in front of a painting.
Yeah.
Is it that same painting?
It is. It is the same painting. That's why I feel like it, because that happens right after they have the funeral for their mom and they're all like praying at the painting. And that's why I feel like, again, it's like, I just feel like it's some way it has to do with the mom, because even when they release all those balloons at the funeral, Mia goes to release her balloon with the doll attached to it, but the doll just falls down, almost signifying like she's not going to get into heaven or something like that. It was very weird. So I noticed that. So there's something about this painting, and it makes, you know, Grace's nose bleed, or at least that's the vibe I got, because she looks at it and then looks back down at her food and her nose bleeds. And then she also gets up at one point and throws it, you know, or like gets rid of it. She's like, fuck that painting. So there's a lot going on with Grace. There's a lot going on with these kids. And Richard is just not there for half of this movie. He's like, I got to go into town for work. Bye. Now, do you think that he was in on this? Is that what you were saying earlier? You think he was part of?
Absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely. Can we talk about how nice his house was, for the record? And then he's still rocking like a fucking Jeep Cherokee from 1991 to drive the kids up there.
With the wood paneling. You're like, really, dude?
They ran out of budget. Yeah. They got everything else.
All right. So why do you think he was involved? Because like, I would love to hear your thoughts on that. Please tell me.
I think that they actually allude to it towards the end, after like the kids realized they lost control. I think the kids were in control, and I think they were kind of guided in a sense by the dad. Okay. And they never explain why. So, you know, this is all theory, obviously, but they, you know, maybe we should give her another sleeping pill, you know, and give me your phone, you know, so I can talk to dad. Well, I, you know, mine's dead because I talk to dad too often. So there was communication going on there. And I'm wondering if, you know, they're doing all of these things, right? And dad's at home and he's playing with his little dollhouse. And I, again, I can't tell if there's like some kind of paranormal entity because he leaves the house in a hurry. That last day.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's because the phones are down and he can't get through, but you would have thought the kids would have told him like, hey, we're running out of juice here or something.
Right.
But it looked like he saw something in the dollhouse that freaked him out, that made him want to leave early, earlier than he planned to.
Okay.
So it leads me to believe, but they don't explain it. And him being a writer, I'm just thinking outside the box. I'm thinking maybe he's just putting this story together, for a good book. And he's just trying to steer her further into madness. Maybe he can save her at the end, but you know, obviously that doesn't happen.
Yeah, that. Like that. Okay, that, I mean, it tracks. I can't say that it doesn't like ring a little bit of truth there. That's an interesting. I like that. That is that would add a whole other fucking layer to this movie. Because yeah, they do have a pretty good handle on it until they take her pills away, which she was hiding. Ooh, yes. This is shaping up to be very good because she was hiding those pills from Richard. So he had no idea. I mean, the kids knew, but the kids probably didn't know how important those pills were, but she was hiding those pills from Richard in the beginning of the movie, and they take them away and she's gone, you know, and then they fuck with her to a point that makes her revert back to like her cult days. Man, I think this has some traction here. I like this. Yeah, that's definitely a possibility. I think that is a 100% fact that he definitely had a weighing hand in it, and it went too far, ended up costing him his life, and what you assume the kids their life too, because the end of the movie vibes like the cult where everyone had tape on their mouths that said sin, and it just cuts to a shot of the gun. Yeah. Which is in the beginning of the movie. So it's kind of a wraparound to the end. And then it just ends with, you know, her like singing that very creepy song. So it's suggested that, you know, she killed the kids and probably killed herself as well. Kind of completing what she, you know, almost should have done with the, you know, the suicide cult. Woo, man. This is why I love talking about movies. I think my rating just went up on this one. Ooh, man. Is there anything else that you wanted to touch on or that we didn't touch on that you'd like to talk about now before we wrap up? Because I think we did a pretty good job with this one, honestly.
I do have one.
Yes.
So now this is by no means a cry for help. And if you have any thoughts of suicide, obviously, you know, talk to the right person or call the hotline that's there.
Right, correct.
But the scene where Aiden fakes his suicide, right? Like, we're not, you know, we're already dead. And he, like, jumps and hangs himself. So, for a minute there, I thought that they were actually in purgatory, which we talked about.
Right.
So, let's just say, hypothetically, you and I are in purgatory, right? Yeah. We're already dead. Would you go all Bill Murray, like, in Groundhog Day and, like, try to kill yourself a bunch of different ways? Like, I always wonder what it was like to jump off a building.
Honestly, I mean, yeah. I mean, if I know I'm there and it's not going to hurt.
Nothing's going to happen.
Nothing's going to happen. I think I would go Bill Murray and just see how many different ways I could die. I mean, just
that came to my head.
Yeah, that's a great question.
You got nothing to lose, right?
Yeah, you might as well throw a toaster in a bath, jump off a building, go freeze. I mean, yeah, I mean the options are
in front of a van or something. Yeah,
that's hilarious. Oh my god, yes, I think I would definitely go Bill Murray if I knew I was in purgatory.
Yeah, that's it. That's a real thing, though. Just so you know, there's a thing called Call to the Void. Have you ever heard of that? That theory?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so again, it's a theory. But so, have you ever been near? I don't know, like you're on a bridge, you're walking across a bridge, or you're near like a cliff or something high, or you're just driving.
Yeah.
And you're like, I wonder what would happen if I just like steered into, that's the Call to the Void.
Yeah.
You would never do it.
Right.
But there is a thought that goes through your head that you're just like, I wonder what would happen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it'd probably suck. You know, you're probably not coming back from it. No. But just like, I just wonder.
Yep.
You know, there's always, yeah. But that's a real thing. The Call to the Void. And that just kind of reminded me, I don't know, I got on that whole fucking tangent of like well, if you're already dead, fuck it, let's go have some fun.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what does that say about me as an individual? Do I need some kind of help?
My intrusive thoughts are definitely winning in this instance. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I do that all the time. I've done that all the time, like hiking. I've been, you know, we've hiked up mountains and I'm like, what if jumped off, like what would happen? I mean, it'd be terrible probably, but yeah, I think about that all the time. Or just like, yeah, it's like the intrusive thoughts definitely need to not win in that instance, but yeah, I have definitely I've definitely had those.
Right.
Yeah. All right. I like it. What a way to end.
Weird way to end the podcast. Yeah.
Taglines for this movie. We've got "You're not welcome here," and that was the only one I could find. Couldn't find any fun trivia or goofs. This is rated 6.0 out of 10 on IMDb, 3.1 out of 5 on Letterboxd. It has a 75% on the tomato meter and a 51% audience score. I gave this a 4, but I think after talking about it, I might raise it up to a 4.5. I know you do your rankings out of 10. So what would you give it out of 10?
Well, I converted it to your rating system and I gave it a 3.625 out of 5, which is 7.5 out of 10 for non-math majors, which I am not, but I'm just making it easier for everybody. But yeah, so about a 7.5 out of 10, mainly because there's a lot of the loose ends there and it drags just a tiny bit.
Just a little bit.
It might go up upon a revisit, but yeah. First impression, I did really enjoy it. Okay. I just had to watch it again, I think.
Perfect. Similar movies according to Letterboxd, we have Hereditary, The Haunting of Hill House, The Babadook, Oculus, and The Sixth Sense. And similar movies according to IMDb, we have Goodnight Mommy, The Night House, The Dark and the Wicked, The Invitation, and Saint Maud. Did you happen to find any reviews you wanted to share? I found, let me see. I have four reviews that I found.
I did not, actually.
That's okay. That's okay. I will go through mine real quick, and then we will wrap it up. I have a 2.5 star from Matt Lynch, and it's just Adventures in Babysitting. That's fucking great. I love it. 2 stars from Josh Lewis. If I were a small child whose mom recently committed suicide, I would simply not very elaborately gaslight my dad's new GF, who is an unstable lone survivor of a suicide cult. Fucking facts. I'm just saying. Let's see here. The Lodge, 3.5 stars from number one Gizmo fan. Fuck them kids. Yeah, I have to agree. Kind of pieces of shit. And last but not least, we have 4.5 stars from Cinephile. So this is basically that scene in The Parent Trap where Annie and Hallie make their dad's new girlfriend miserable for the entire camping trip, except it goes on for 90 extra minutes and it's way more cruel and sinister. You mentioned The Parent Trap earlier.
Dude, the whole part where she woke up on the lake, I thought for sure that was Parent Trap. I was like, because that happens in The Parent Trap. They're on the fucking, that raft or whatever.
Yep, 100%. 100%. So John, where can everyone find your podcast, Little Hops of Horror? I know you just added it to a couple new platforms, actually. So where can they find it?
Yeah, we're on Spotify. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts for now, but that's getting shut down,
which is
a bummer. Cause actually, yeah, it's getting shut down, which is a bummer. That was my podcast like app. Cause I don't like my music and my podcast separate, but that's irrelevant.
That's fair. Yeah, that's fair.
We're on Amazon Music and also Audible. Working to get to YouTube Music, but we're having some issues with that for whatever reason. So,
weird.
But the four big ones there. That's all.
Definitely go give them a like and a follow on Facebook, and you're on Instagram as well too.
Instagram and Facebook, yeah. Trying to figure out TikTok, but I'm an old guy and I don't really want to do it, even though the kids.
That's apparently where the youths are, and that's like the hopping app. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Slasher app at Frightmares Podcast, or email us stayspooky@outlook.com. You can follow me personally on Letterboxd at Dr. Proctor. Next week, me and my good friend Aid are going to be covering a very, very bloody Christmas movie. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's a recent one from last year, so tune in for that. And until then, stay tuned and stay spooky.